Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Jason Ophir, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Horizons. We are back with another exciting show. And as always, here with the beautiful and talented Sherry Pang. Sherry, how's it going?
Good. How are you, Jason?
I'm doing okay. Anything exciting? How was your last week?
Well, it was good. Just really just relaxing and nothing really to brag about. But today we enjoyed the nice day and, you know, visiting a girlfriend and just going out to the river, towards the river. And it was just really nice. It's been very, very pleasant today.
That's what I got to do. I got to go spend some time on a river. I always like swimming in the rivers, you know. I haven't done it in a couple of years. I find it rather relaxing.
Good. Well, I will get my feet wet, but I don't swim. I don't know how to swim. It's been years ago. I'll probably drown. But I will get my feet wet.
You don't know how to swim?
No.
Oh, we've got to get you out. I mean, yeah, what if there's a flood or something?
Well, I hope you can rescue me. I hope you can rescue me, Jason.
I'm on it. I'll rescue you. You'll be fine. You notice anything in the paranormal while I've been poking around the last week online?
Nothing really unusual. I post things, and like I said, you know, to our listeners, whether it's our radio show on KNCP or KITC, these things that you and I both list on our post there on the pages are just something that may be of interest, and it doesn't have to say that, you know, it's our thoughts or we believe in it. It's just something that we can connect with our audience, but nothing really out of the extraordinary. What about you, Jason?
Nothing really paranormal. I did see some information, some news stories regarding earthquake swarms under Yellowstone National Park, which, as many people know, is a super volcano. There's a big caldera of lava under that, which if Yellowstone blows, which it should within the next 50,000 years, it would probably be a world changer. And I also read that NASA had diverted one of its telescopes to do flyovers over it, so it almost makes it look like the government's keeping a close eye on Yellowstone. So hopefully that won't pop in our lifetimes, because if it does, everything will be devastated. Crops, you know, it could put the world into another ice age, you know. Everything would be terrible. So let's hope Yellowstone doesn't go up. But other than that, I haven't really noticed too much. And you got us a great guest tonight. I know we're going to talk about some exorcism stuff. So who we got lined up? And I see that they're in queue.
Hi. And we want to welcome for the very first time to Blog Talk Radio and our radio station. His name is James Cloud. And I don't know if some of you were looking at the Paranormal Horizons post on Facebook, but he is a Catholic priest, and he can tell you a little bit more. We want to get in the nuts and bolts of attachments and exorcisms and how to get rid of them and things like that, but we're going to have him give him the floor. But he is a Catholic priest, and he has he's a veteran exorcist. And he has just a wonderful guy, really connected with him. Just, you know, his family, beautiful family. Wife is gorgeous. She's just a beautiful soul. And I wanted to have him on our show and just have him share his experiences or share with our audiences what he's learned or what we can learn from what he does. So let's put him on and give him the floor.
All righty. James, how are you?
Hi there. I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing really well. Thanks for coming on the show, and I'm excited about this topic. It's always one that I find really exciting, and I think the listeners will also be excited by it. So I guess we'll kind of give you the floor, and maybe you can introduce yourself a little bit more extensively than Sherry did, and let's just dig right into this exorcism and your experiences.
Hi, Jay.
Well, hi, Sherry. How are you?
Good. Very, very good. Yes. Okay.
Good.
We'll get you. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I'm Archbishop James Cloud. I'm an old Catholic bishop, part of the Advent International Catholic Church, and I'm also head of their Order of Exorcists, as well as an affiliate member of the Sacred Order of St. Michael, which is Bishop Files' exorcist order. Bishop Ouellette is part of that. You might have heard him on here before. He's a good friend of mine. I have a couple doctorates, one in theology, one in divinity. I'm also a mental health therapist, also an alcohol and drug counselor. So I bring a lot of tools to the table when it comes to reports of the paranormal, hauntings, possessions, oppressions, infestations, that type of stuff, to verify if it's actually spiritual or is there a substance issue or is it a mental health issue, and I'm able to differentiate between the three. So that's kind of my background on that. I've been an exorcist for over 20 years, about 25 years or so. Been in active ministry in one form or the other, especially in exorcism, since the age of 18. It's been kind of a lifelong thing with me. Some people have an interest in it. It was thrust on me when I was 4 years old. And from that time forth, I've experienced many, many paranormal incidents, as well as generationally through my mother's line. We've experienced paranormal issues. And so it was kind of just an extension of who I am to become an exorcist and to help others that are struggling.
It's always a subject that kind of makes me nervous when we start talking about, like, you know, demons and possession. And we talked to quite a few people before about the exorcisms and possession and infestation and stuff like that. And I've always found myself, and I've said it many times before on the show, you know, I'm a little bit on the skeptical side because I'm one of the people that kind of have to see something in order to really believe it. But what have you had instances in conducting your exorcisms where there has been like evidence that can't be explained scientifically? Because I'm always kind of like leaning towards the scientific, like something has to have an explanation. And I know a lot of things in life don't have an explanation, but I was wondering maybe you could share some of your, your personal stories or stories of you performing exorcisms and what those kind of looked like.
Sure. Well, first and foremost, you know, if I didn't experience the things I've experienced in the past, I probably wouldn't believe it either. Just throwing that out there. Because a lot of the stuff that I experience as an exorcist and as a bishop kind of goes out of the realm of physical science, more into the realm, if you want to extend it into quantum mechanics or quantum physics, the quantum state of the soul, the quantum state of molecules in existence. There's been instances when I did house cleansings that I went down into the basement of this home I was called into, and this individual and their son were having quite a bit of spiritual issues going on. It was pretty apparent that they were sane and they weren't on drugs or, you know, drunk at the time that they said they were experiencing things. So those were immediately negated. So then, you know, my team and I usually look at reasonable explanations first. Yeah. But in this case, I was down in the basement and I looked over to my left and I saw a shadow person, and it kind of took me by surprise. It wasn't the type of shadow person that I've been normally seeing since I was 4 years old, but this one looked like the Russian stacking dolls, but that shape, where it has the vague head, kind of the bulbous body that goes out. So it has the shape of the Russian stacking dolls. And in this instance, I looked over, and as soon as I realized what it was, it bum-rushed me and hit and went through my body. It felt, the easiest way to explain it was, it felt like you're sitting in front of an AC on the highest setting of cool, and you feel it hit your skin, gives you the goosebumps. But then as it went through, I felt the same effect in my muscles, then in my internal organs, and in the rear, my muscles, and then the skin as it exited. So it was like this wall of cold that went through me, but had a definite beginning and a definite ending to it. Thankfully, when it comes to fight or flight, when I'm freaked out, and in that case, I was pretty freaked out. But the good thing is I usually drop into fight mode. So it didn't accomplish anything but make me really, really angry really, really fast. And so I just attacked it head on and got rid of it using the rite of exorcism. So that was one incident that really stood out in my experience.
James?
Yeah.
James, can I ask you, are shadow people, let me ask you, mm-hmm. are they an entity? Are they a multidimensional? What can they be, or what is the possibilities that these shadow people come from, or what are they?
Well, I believe they're mainly multidimensional.
Okay.
I kind of have this idea, since I'm into quantum mechanics, quantum physics, and that science has proven that, I mean, there are as many dimensions as probably you can count. If, for instance, I'm going to try to put it in real simple terms, if we lived in a two-dimensional world, say we lived on a sheet of paper, we didn't have the third dimension, so we weren't tall. We were just as flat and wide as the paper. Well, if a finger went through the paper, you got to use your imagination on this. As the finger goes through the paper, you would just see a large dot getting bigger, and as the finger was pulled out, the dot would get smaller and smaller, and everyone would sit back and go, you know, what was that big dot? Well, in actuality, it was a finger, but in our understanding of dimensionality, we wouldn't be able to get the whole picture. It would be literally a shadow of what it is. And I believe these are entities that are interdimensional, spiritual. I believe a lot of the things that we call spiritual beings are actually interdimensional beings. If we look at, like, the history of individuals reporting angels, for instance, you know, the guys with wings, halos, the good guys. Well, we can read in the scriptures, they sit down, they eat, you know, they interact with folks, they look like you and me, but they also have the ability to disappear, reappear, have extraordinary abilities. I believe a lot of that can be explained by their multidimensional layer, nature, I should say. So it is spiritual, but it's also a physical being. Just like the shadow person had to have some level of physicality to actually hit, go through, and exit my body. So, and to actually feel it, and it felt like a rush of wind going through. So,
are they good and bad?
Shadow people, in my experience, are always bad.
Okay.
I've not met one shadow person in all my years of being exorcist that had a good outcome on the family or individual that they're menacing. These guys are the epitome of evil, because all they seek to do is to destroy or put fear into people.
Does that make them demons? Does that make them like demonic entities, or are they something different, the shadow people?
I would say they're of a demonic nature, absolutely.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I want to preface it by demonic, quote unquote, being that which is against God, against his nature, against his being, against his supremacy. So anything that would be against God and all his glory, by its very definition, would be a demon.
So does it kind of go back to like a heaven and hell thing where, you know, good's fighting evil, angels and demons, and salvations of one's soul? Is it all that kind of biblical stuff, these entities? Is that what it boils down to?
I believe so. Because it seems like the ultimate goal of many of these entities is to, one, cast doubt on yourself, whether it be your mental stability, your spiritual standing with God, that whole line of thought, but also to doubt the power of God. Goes along those lines of, if God's so good, why there's so much evil in the world? Well,
can a person
yeah.
attract a shadow person, or is it something where it is they live in a premise, that they live in a place, and a person moves in and they find out that this shadow person has been there for a long time. They just never noticed it.
Yeah, that's the thing with these dark entities. They typically need a person, place, or thing to inhabit or to feel like they own. There's reasons why I believe that's so, but it would take another 20 minutes for me to explain why I think that's so. But in my experience, they don't just wander aimlessly. They're usually tied to a location, tied to an object, or attached to a person.
Wow. So we can actually pick up a shadow person.
Oh, absolutely. Amongst other entities, absolutely.
Wow.
We've talked to other people before where people do things that kind of open the door, like dabble in the occult or take
mm-hmm.
drugs or drink. Is that your experience? You kind of, by doing those sort of things, you're opening the door or maybe lowering your defenses to make you more available to these negative forces?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The number one reason why I'm typically called in when all hell is broke loose, literally, in a person's life. They've dabbled in the occult, whether that's Ouija, into magic systems of different origins and whatnot, that are trying to coerce, talk to, or summon entities. Well, that's like just leaving the porch light on and say, come on in, all guests are welcome. The other one is, you mentioned, with drug use. Well, in the scriptures, the Bible condemns sorcery. Well, the Greek word for sorcery is pharmakeia. We get the modern word for pharmacy. So the direct correlation to that is drug abuse absolutely opens doors in people's lives that they don't even know they're opening. They're just wanting to have a good time, get high. But at the same time, they're also opening themselves up to a demonic or other attachments.
Well, what about with, like, I know that, you know, it seems like mental illness is a really big problem in the world, and doctors are so apt to prescribe, you know, these antidepressants and stuff like that. Do you think that those are also kind of, that's kind of wrapped into the whole drug use thing? Because it seems like there's just an epidemic of people on these SSRIs, those selective serotonin uptake inhibitors. I think that's what they are.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that that's kind of a part of the problem too?
I'm not sure the antidepressants would qualify as a sorcery in that it's not geared at altering a state of mind per se, where they're, you know, trying to expand their consciousness and all this other stuff. They are trying to treat a legitimate, most of the time biological imbalance in the brain. And so now the stuff that may do it, I mean, you can look at a slew of other bugs, both legal and illicit, that may absolutely contribute to that. But the SSRIs, I'm not really sold historically on the fact that they may open doors.
Well, I know when I was a lot younger, I was always dabbling and stuff. I hope I don't have anything following me around. That's kind of a scary thought. I mean, I've seen some strange things in my time. One time, and I've mentioned this once or twice before on the show, I was kind of, I was leaving a friend's house. I was alone in my pickup, and the whole family got into another car, and they were following me down the road in their car. And when we got to where we were going, they said there was a man sitting in the passenger seat with his head turned towards looking at me, and everybody in their car saw it. So it's those kind of things that really make you wonder.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, have you had other experiences along those lines that others have seen or you've seen yourself? And that, if the answer to that is yes, there could very well be an attachment. Because not all, this is the other thing to know about attachments. Not all of them are going to spook you in the middle of the night or, you know, manifest as a spirit to spook you or whatnot. Some may affect relationships, finances, your health, and lie low. They'll just attach and cause these almost like a dark cloud to follow you over the years.
So for the listeners out there, what would be some signs that somebody would have picked up an attachment? I mean, you kind of broke it down broadly with relationships. Is there any any sort of indicators that would be really, that would strongly suggest that somebody has an attachment? Because, I mean, there's always life and bad things are going to happen.
Sure.
So how do you differentiate between, you know, just bad luck or some sort of negative attachment on you?
Well, I would say generally, you know, using a generality here, generally people experience both the highs and lows of life. But if an individual is constantly fighting financial struggles, relationship struggles, life struggles, not as a result of their own choices, mind you. They may be, those with an attachment may be trying to make good choices, but the good choices always seem to come around and bite them in the end. Without very, they would have little to no high points. It would all be always be a succession of losses, failures, broken relationships, broken homes, that kind of thing. That would give you a slight indicator. The other, you know, definitely at that point I'd come out, you know, bless the person, maybe give them some spiritual counseling and see where it goes from there. But if they're having spiritual manifestations on top of it, then definitely there's an attachment.
So what about people, James, let me ask you, what about people that are, I call them psychic vampires, that always, you know, feel like they're always, you know, as an attachment, they're always whining and they're always, you know, just kind of feel like you're, they're always sucking you off or just, you know, just too much, you know, you just, your energy is just always feel like you're, you know, they're always siphoning money, you know, whether it's psychologically, emotionally, mentally. Can that be an attachment also too? They can,
it can be an indicator of attachment, but it, and from a mental health perspective, it can also be what's called learned helplessness, where the individual actually gets rewarded for the negativity from others saying, you know, oh, poor you, yeah, you're really struggling. And that's their only way they've learned to deal with others in their life. And so they learn a state of helplessness. Yes. Because gives them sympathy and it gives, in it's a weird, twisted way, but
it
in
is.
A way it gives them a sense of community because they're always the center of attention. They're the topic of conversation. Typically, and people make special concessions for them because they're so Eeyore, basically. They're a living embodiment of Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh. And it's a matter of retraining their brain to see that they don't need the negative behaviors and negative reinforcements to feel like they're a part of something.
Question also, too, what about when you have, like, dabbling into, like, the pendulum or the tarot cards or, you know, crystals and things like that? You know, what is your take on that as far as attracting attachments?
They can absolutely draw an attachment. You got to look at those things like a radio. You're tuning in to any entity's frequency to try and divine messages and divine information through those type of sources. And as a result, anything can come through. It's just another form of Ouija. You're just not asking, you're asking yes or no. In tarot, you're looking for your own intuition plus the entity's input.
Exactly. That makes sense. Totally makes sense. I like the way you put it in perspective. It's the same as Ouija board, but you're just using a different tool to get to the same point.
Yes, and you're contacting the same entities to get the same information.
Yes. Okay.
And I suppose that ghost hunting, people that go out and do paranormal investigations, probably it's the same thing, maybe even more so, you know, when you're trying to collect EVPs and incite some sort of response from the entities, you're probably also opening the door. I guess that kind of goes without saying. It's pretty obvious.
Yeah, it can, depending on the intent of the investigators, you can absolutely open doors. Like my team that I have go out and do a pre-investigation of a person or a location, they're looking for the explainable stuff. They're if they get an EVP, that's great. That just gives proof that, yeah, they need me, the trigger man, to go in and take care of the entities, but they're not holding full-blown conversations. They're not, you know, inviting these things to possess them or to channel through them or anything like that. That's when you really, if you do those other types of things, that's when you really open yourselves up for an attachment.
That's why there's a lot of paranormal investigators I hear. They come home and they end up having problems. You know, if they become ill, they become all kinds of, that's heard, James, is that they end up having problems and they end up having to call you to go and help them or somehow,
yep,
you know, get some kind of help because they open themselves up to that. Whether the intention is or, you know, whatever, I don't know, but that's why I don't go into paranormal investigations because I know that I would not, you know, I don't want to open that door for myself. You know, that's not something that is, that I don't want to be trained in and I don't have an interest in. But I know you take your job very seriously and I admire you for risking yourself just to help others that, you know, that are seeking some kind of solace into their problem.
Absolutely. You know, on that topic, even as an exorcist, you know, it's not talked about often with exorcists, but we're usually in the crosshairs of these entities because we're the ones that are basically tying them up in a strong cord and tossing them out the door. So they're going to fight tooth and nail. I mean, I've been scratched, hit, punched, had my name called, you know, it's crazy the things that the exorcists have to endure. That you might think are an attachment, but they're really just a casualty of war. You can look at it in the terms of warfare. The best soldier, the most prepared soldier or Marine, you know, they go into battle. There's a chance they could get hurt, despite how well they're prepared. And exorcists are the frontline infantrymen under the general who is Christ. So we absolutely take our, you know, we absolutely get hurt every now and then. Not bad, because we are protected, but enough that we know we are in a war.
Do the movies, do they blow it out of proportion when you go see a movie on exorcism where stuff's flying around the room or the walls are bleeding? Is that totally blown out of proportion? Does that sort of thing happen, those extreme paranormal events? Is that real or not?
Yes and no. No, in the sense, you know, there isn't a little girl that's with her head spinning around spitting out green pea soup or anything like that. But yes, to the items can fly around the room. There can be levitation. There can be manifestations similar to like blood in the walls, or even the walls are bending and bowing. That sort of stuff. The movies definitely hype it up, but that stuff does happen, but it's usually very rare.
You said, James, the walls are bending and bowing, you said?
I'm sorry, what was that?
You said the walls are bending and bowing?
Yeah, in some instances, the walls will actually bend inward and away from the room.
Oh, my God. I can't fathom
that. I've heard two stories of that. One actually happened to my grandmother. Because, like I said, generationally, we've experienced paranormal activity. And they lived in a yellow Victorian home where the walls, absolutely, she was sitting on the couch, and the walls bend and bowed, and, you know, she heard maniacal laughter at the same time. And needless to say, she was pretty scared.
Now, I don't remember who we talked to in the past, but we talked to somebody that says, like, generations of families can be haunted, like, for generations. Is that kind of what you're talking about here? Has your family been haunted, you know, through the succession of relatives?
I believe so. To give you a brief synopsis of what I'm talking about with our particular generational thing, my grandmother, when she was about 3 years old, this was back in like 1918 or so, my grandmother and my great-grandmother, her mom, were sleeping in bed, and my great-grandmother heard my grandmother choking at the age of three. And so she turned over in bed, and there was this black mass hovering over her, choking her. And my great-grandmother was able to actually grab the thing and throw it against the wall, and it shrieked when it hit the wall and then went down into the floor and disappeared.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, freaky. And my mom, she's seen the dead. She's seen entities all her life. And I've seen them ever since I was four. So I guess generationally we also have the sight, and so that may make us more prone to being not necessarily open, but more targets, if that word would fit better.
I hope I don't have any sight. If I have any kind of psychic ability or any gifts like that, or maybe you'd call them curses, I don't want it. I want it shut off, because the last thing I need in my life, I'm too busy out there with dealing with the people, let alone having to deal with any sort of creatures or demons. I have no interest in that. But I've done paranormal investigating in people's homes quite a bit, and you know, I've seen stuff I can't explain. I don't do it anymore, but I have no interest in opening myself up to that at all. I have enough to worry about.
Well,
so I commend
yourself
you
lucky.
I commend you for what you do. I mean, you are putting yourself, you know, in these, you know, dangerous situations and trying to help people with their problems like that. But one question I did have was, if somebody does have an attachment, do they necessarily have to go to somebody else to get them removed, or is there something that they can do themselves to help rid themselves of the attachment?
Well, a lot of times if they have an attachment before their conversion to Christianity, we'll use this scenario. The act of baptism, when they confess their allegiance to Christ and they're baptized, baptism in and of itself is a minor rite of exorcism. There's even an exorcist prayer that goes along with it traditionally to exorcise anything off of the individual to hopefully break those attachments. And typically they're broken with no problem. The ones that have attachments throughout the years, and maybe they became a Christian or whatnot, and they still have attachments, they need to have, go to a pastor or a priest that actually believes in attachment, because unfortunately in the modern age, many pastors and even many priests don't even believe almost in the existence of the devil, much less the attachments, the hauntings, or anything else. And so they're wholly inequipped, and a lot of them won't even help individuals that are going through things because they don't even really believe in the stuff themselves.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Perfect sense.
What about the other?
Go
ahead, Sherry.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, with my experience, I had a priest come in, and James knows this, I had a priest come into my house and was blessing my house, and the feeling I got and the consequences were no changes, to be honest with you. Bless his heart.
Yeah.
But you have to know what you're doing and have to have the experience of believing that there is a devil and how to do it. And that is something in an entirely different realm, It really is. It's a specialty, basically.
Well, and the sad thing is, in the early church, there were actually more exorcists than ordained clergy. The reality of exorcism was so apparent within the early church that they devoted a lot of their time to that. It was just a natural part of the ministry. Unfortunately, in the modern age, I'll just be blunt, a lot of ministers are in it for the money. So it's a business. Their faith is minimal at best most of the time.
It's true.
So it's like going back to the war analogy. You give a soldier's only as good as the weapons they carry. They may be able to do hand-to-hand, but if you're going against an opponent with the tank and you're out there buck naked, the opponent with the tank is going to get you every time. It's the same way that if the priest or minister has no faith, they have no grounding in the Word of God or in have that lively faith in Christ through the power of the Holy Spirit, they're going to be utterly ineffectual to do anything. And so, finding the right people to help individuals that are experiencing these type of phenomena is actually more important than just finding the average minister or priest.
There does seem to be a lot of people that do kind of a disservice. And one of the things that I've seen, you read about the stories of these mega churches and them doing these faith healings, and it turns out to be like totally fake. And
yeah.
I think that kind of is counterproductive. And that's kind of been one of the things with, I'm not religious at all, but it's kind of been one of the detractors with me is seeing stuff like that where people are just taking advantage of other people for money. And these are people that are, professing to be, using the power of God and all that. And it really does a disservice.
Oh, it absolutely does.
Money is a corrupter. I don't understand how these people sleep at night by doing this to other people.
Well, if you tell yourself a lie long enough, you start to believe it yourself. So, if you tell yourself you're doing the work of God, yet the business is the most important aspect of the ministry, then you got a problem. For myself, I've never taken a stipend or a salary as when I was a parish priest, a deacon, or now as a bishop, I don't take a salary. I work as a mental health therapist. You know, kind of like St. Paul, he didn't take any money from the ministry, even though scriptures say a workman is worthy of their hire. The Levitical priests were taken care of through food and clothing in the temple services of the Old Testament. Many of the apostles got their livelihood from donations to actually spread the gospel. But their focus wasn't on the money. They simply trusted God that the funds would be there in order to do his work. Instead of developing a business plan, you know, 5-year business plan, how many people can get through the door to fill up airspace and fill our pockets, instead of, gee, how many people can we actually bring to Christ to help them know God more intimately on a deeper level so that they're equipped to go out and help others as well, not just sit back with pop psychology or to feel good or, you know, say, hey, I went to church on Sunday, now I look presentable, because Christ got on to the Pharisees for the exact same thing. He said, you look pretty on the outside, but you're full of dead men's bones on the inside. You look like you fit the part, but on the inside you're corrupt. And unfortunately, the modern church is very closely aligned with the Church of Laodicea, described in the book of Revelation.
This whole thing is one of my most one of the subjects that I find most interesting. And now, we didn't really cover, I wanted to talk a little bit about, just for the listeners' benefit, the different kind of interactions one can have with these negative spirits. So you have the extreme, which is the possession, you have the attachment and the oppression. Could you kind of give a little quick rundown on what the levels are?
Sure. There's three primary levels to what we would classify a haunting as. The first is infestation. This is where an entity is in a location or is attached to an object, and people are noticing the thumps and bumps, scratches, odd noises, maybe odd smells, maybe some having their names called or whatnot throughout their home or in a location. This would be what's called an infestation. Oppression is the next level. This is when the entity has not stopped with the environmental activity, but now it's starting to also include a more pinpointed assault on an individual. It may affect their moods. It may create depression, anxiety, anger, this type of stuff in the individual, in addition to what's going on in the environmental house or their location. Possession is more rare. It doesn't happen as often, but it still happens. Possession is when the entity has actually taken control of the individual, if it's sporadically, or it could be 24/7. So an individual that's possessed may have periods of lucidity where they're talking, walking as themselves, and then they'll lose time. When people say, hey, you know, you started cussing us out, or you went off the handle, or you just started secluding yourself, you know, this isn't like you, what's going on? Or they may have odd behaviors. They may speak in other languages that they don't know, kind of the typical, you know, 5-year-old girl that starts speaking perfect Latin or Greek or something. That would be another indicator that there is a possession going on.
What about addictions, James? You know, when you're talking about, you know, whether it's gambling or drugs or alcohol or pornography, what are those? What are they? That could be part of it too.
Absolutely. Anything you give, this is something that I have to kind of set the stage for. Any addiction, any thing that you basically put above God and his wishes for your life has become your God, whether that is substances, pornography, gambling, to the detriment of yourself and maybe even your family. So we're in the correct way of looking at things, how we were created in the garden, you know, the whole meaning of life was to have a relationship with God and each other. That's the secret of life. But when addictions step in, it's all about the self. They don't care the effect on others. They don't care how others feel, as long as they get their fix, whatever that may be. That's a very antithetical, anti-God position to take. And absolutely, God can help you out of those things. He can restore you and bring you into right relationship with him and with others. But when an addiction has set in, it's many addictions rewire the brain itself biologically so that they can't find pleasure unless they engage in their addictive behavior. Whereas naturally we find our peace and solace when we're at peace with God. Kind of like St. Augustine said, you know, we don't find peace until we find him. A loose paraphrase.
Well, I know a lot about addiction. I'm addicted to slot machines. It's terrible. I love my slot machines. And I used to, I've been making improvements. You know, I used to drink a lot, like every day. I actually quit drinking. I haven't drank in like 4 years. So,
oh, wow. Great. Good job.
Yeah, thanks. And I haven't felt worse since. I mean, I've felt worse since. You know, God, I used to love to drink and the feeling of being buzzed, but, you know, I stuck with it. But those dang slot machines, I don't know if there's any spiritual stuff behind it, but what you were talking about was rewiring the brain. And, you know, with, like, gambling addiction, they actually – it has the same effect as drugs, you know, when you're winning or losing. You're getting that endorphin or whatever it is. So – it's really interesting.
Same thing. Yep. Well, and, you know, the addiction counselor here is coming out. For instance, the natural reward chemicals in our brain are there to reinforce behaviors such as eating, sleeping, love, connectedness to others. That all raises our reward systems to feel connected and to feel at peace or happy, or to get joy out of a situation. An illicit drug. So the act of sex raises the natural reward system to 150%, and then it goes back to the normal levels afterward. Well, methamphetamine raises those percentages to 4,000%, so that it's so highly addictive because they never feel that kind of rush from any other daily interaction than when they're getting their hit. Gambling is up there too because it's rewiring the reward. It reinforces the lights and the bells and the whistles saying, oh, man, you're a winner. You're worth something. Hey, you even got some money in your pocket. And over time, that rewires the reward system. And so we have to have any addictive behavior in our interactions because, for instance, a person that is an habitual drinker, they go out with their buddies, drink, have a great time, play pool, whatnot. You know, you'd think it's pretty innocent, and most of the time it is. However, once that person stops drinking and they go out with their buddies again, it's kind of like, well, this kind of sucks. You know, it's not as fun, it's not great. They're doing the same things. They're just not adding the addictive piece in, which is the alcohol. And so they don't get as much joy or pleasure out of the same scenario.
So I guess the lesson from addiction is that there is potential spiritual consequence when you are engaging in those addictive behaviors. You're potentially could allow yourself to become more susceptible, like we were talking earlier, to attachment and
well, sure,
things like that.
Sure. And well, even like the occult activities, the occult makes one feel powerful, feel like they're in control. It's all an illusion, but for a time, the entities are happy to let you think you're the boss, you're the king, that you're powerful, you don't take any guff from anyone. But after a time, just like substances or any other addictive thing, the entities turn. And now that you're hooked into the activity, they will absolutely start to take on a darker turn. From a haunting standpoint, I personally don't believe in children's spirits, because the scripture says that their angels always behold the face of the Father. So if that's the case, logically thinking this through, if there's a child spirit, a couple things have happened. Now, this I'm talking about a scenario here. If there's a true child spirit, something has happened. Either their angel is incompetent, God is incompetent, or God is a liar. So I don't believe any of those things. Therefore, I don't see the possibility of a child spirit. However, during hauntings, I've been called in many, many times as an exorcist that they say, oh, well, there's this child spirit, but there's this really bad spirit, too, that is, you know, it's like, and they create this big scenario, and this child was killed by a murderer, it was their abuser in life, and they're following him in the afterlife. You know, it gets through this whole heart-tugging, heart-wrenching storyline, and really what's happening is the child spirit is like the good time guy. The child spirit manifestation is like the wingman to this other entity. It's the one that makes you feel sorry for the child. Open yourself up to the spirit. I've even heard some individuals give toys to these children's spirits, hoping that they'll have fun. They're so invested emotionally in this child spirit. And then they'll say, oh, yeah, but there's this other spirit that I'm being choked at night. I get scratched. I'm hit. And I tell them it's the same entity. It's just it's trying to get its little meat hooks in you inch by inch. And part of the attachment piece to get rid of an attachment is to release those hooks that have developed over time.
So do you think that when children pass across over, they don't come back and haunt you as a spirit? You know, like I was saying at one time when I was going in and doing a reading and they were talking about a child who had passed on in their house, which was a barn at one time. They said that there was this child that was literally climbing the walls, and their daughter would see in the middle of the night this child would literally climb on the walls and on the ceiling. And it got to the point where the child couldn't sleep at night. So what do you say about that, James?
Well, absolutely. That's almost a case in point of what I was just explaining. The child manifestation is typically will start off as, you know, you hear little footsteps or giggles or something or ball roll across the floor and you think, oh, it's just a little
right.
kid spirit.
Right.
The thing that everyone has to remember is that Christ himself said not to believe every spirit, but to test the spirits to see if they're of God. That being the case, I never take anything at face value that a spirit manifests or what it will say during any investigation or during the exorcism itself. It's almost a surety that these things will lie because they want to stay. They want you to open yourselves to them. They want you to feel sorry for them. And like in the case you just said, it started to develop into a very negative experience because the spirit was more comfortable in that environment to manifest its true nature, climbing up the walls and scaring the children and everything else. And it just goes right along the way I was saying on that.
Okay.
So We only got a few minutes left, so I want to give you an opportunity if any of the listeners out there have any questions or can they contact you for help, website or anything like that that you could share with us?
Yeah, I have my team has a website. It's Paranormal Research Investigators of St. Michael. You can it's a long email address, long web address. It's frjamesstpatrick.com/wix/prism. That will get you to our main website. Also, we have a Facebook presence, Paranormal Research Investigators of St. Michael. You can look us up on Facebook. And the link to our main website is on that as well. And
are you there? Looks like,
hello?
Did we lose you, or can you hear me, Sherry?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, this must be some technical difficulty. Yeah. Are you there, James?
Oh, my goodness.
Well, you know what happens when we start talking about this subject? There's always tends to be some strange technical difficulty.
I know. There's, I don't know what was weird. It was just very interesting how I was, and this is, I got to share this. I was trying to share his bio on our page, and it kept on saying that it would not go through. And it's just really, it's almost like, you know, something was trying to prevent him from, you know, sharing that information on our page. It was really strange, and that's why I end up getting a hold of you so that you can post his bio and have it published to make sure that everybody was aware of his presence coming on the show this evening. So, but anyway, yes, if you have any questions or anything, do go on his webpage. And yes, he can help you if you're serious about maybe having some issues of demonic sorts. And yeah, very good. I have to say, the guy knows what he's doing. Absolutely, don't waste his time unless you got something really serious and need to have some closure on. So.
Absolutely. I want to thank, looks like he hung up. He's calling back in. Let's try and we only have like another minute left to
okay,
talk, but let's bring
him
back on here real quick.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Hi there. Sorry.
James.
I was talking and apparently you lost me.
Well, we've had, when we've talked about the subject before, strange things have happened. But we actually got to wrap up, but I wanted to get you back on to just say thank you so much for coming on the show. And hopefully sometime down in the future we can get you back on and kind of touch this subject a little bit more.
Sounds like a plan. Looking forward to it.
Yes, we'd love to have you back. Thank you, James, and thank you for what you do. You and your wife, your team is awesome. Just awesome.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
All right. We
okay,
have
Jason.
Another.
Go ahead.
Do you have anything? Oh, I was going to say, yeah, so we got another minute, and I guess we'll wrap it up. Okay. I want to thank everybody for listening, and thank our listeners on 106.5 KITC-FM and 107.1 KNCP in Central Oregon, and we'll be back again next Sunday, 8 p.m. West Coast time. Sherry, do you have anything else?
No, nothing else. And hey, if you guys have any feedback or you like us to talk about something else, I guess let us know and be happy to help you out. And just if you want to contribute to our feeds and share anything about the paranormal or the metaphysical or the supernatural or the spiritual, go ahead and post and we'd be happy to go and post for you. So anyway, yes, take care, everybody, and love you guys, and peace.
Good night, everyone, and have a great week.